I will switch to English now because we have our guest already in the line, Jovana from Serbia, and we will talk with her about a climate fight. And yeah, I met her in an Erasmus exchange like 2 months ago. And yeah, I had the honor to meet her and listen to her experience in this fight about a little forest which is close to the, or which is at the city Novi Sad, and that should get destroyed because they want to build a new big road that should bring more cars into the city. And yeah, this is how we met. And now I would like to give you my first question about what forest are we talking here and why did you start to protect it?
So Šodraž is an autochthonous forest on the brink of Danube's backwater. Backwater is this area like a natural canal of the river which takes in the extra water once the Danube rises. So this is a natural forest that has had trees that are 50 to 100 years old, which protect the coast. And it is also a home of over 200 of protected and strictly protected species of plants and animals. And this future bridge will have also some sort of a highway on the top of a viaduct, which will go through a densely populated area. And this threatens to have a highly negative impact on the inhabitants of this boulevard. So in mid-June of 2022, we had the first illegal cutting of these trees. And this was witnessed by the activists. We've had a small protest in the town. And this very day, the activists and the citizens decided to start camping in this area 24/7 in order to protect the forest. This went on for around 8 months, and this was our way to try to make the state respect the law, because we were aware that they don't have this one very important document, which is an assessment of the impact this huge project will have on the environment. And we've been demanding this document, but we've never had a chance to get it, and they were supposed to make this document beforehand, before even starting with the project itself.
Mm-hmm. And how did a regular day look like in the camp?
So once we've made some sort of an infrastructure, so to say, with communication and everything, we've had groups on instant messaging apps, and citizens and activists were communicating through these apps, deciding when they will be in the camp, because camp was populated 24/7 for 8 months, which is, you cannot even imagine how hard this is to pull off with over 100 people communicating through a group. Everybody was deciding which actions they will take, if they will be organizing events, or if they will be preparing food for people who are staying in the night shift. Also, people were giving information on when they will be in the camp so that we can have a proper infrastructure if anybody comes, so we can inform them about why we are there, and also so we can keep track on any suspicious vehicles visiting the area, because we've had suspicious visits. We've had people in unassigned cars, in unsigned cars, checking on the area. We believe that they were trying to scare us in order for us to leave so that they can continue with their illegal actions. And during this period, we've organized countless events, which included different concerts, exhibitions, workshops, lectures, debates on the problems we were having. We've had daily sports activities, we've had urban gardening, and so on. So people would also bring meals to those who were staying in night shifts, and it created a really well-connected community of people who were caring. And when we put aside the problem we were facing, this was a unique way to make people connect themselves to their neighbors and to the other, to the people from other parts of town that they might have never met otherwise. So it created a great community.
Yeah, that would have been also my question of mine, like, who were the people in the camp? And it sounds like a very nice mixture of activists who maybe also came from other cities, or was it mostly activists from Novi Sad?
First of all, we had a wide range of people visiting the camp. You could structure them in like years gap, so to say, in years. We've had students, we've had high school students, we've had primary school students who came there with their teachers or with their parents because they found it important to keep their kids informed about these issues. We've also had different people with different professional backgrounds. We've had lawyers, we've had structural engineers, we've had architects, artists, economists, ecologists, ornithologists. We've had all sorts of people over there, as well as people who are 60 plus years old who gave their free time in order to protect this forest. Also, we've had people visiting, the vast majority of people who were in camp were from Novi Sad, and the activists who were there were not just ecological activists, they were also activists in different subjects dealing with social issues of our society. And finally, we've had people from different cities and different states visiting our camp because they found it important to be informed about these issues as well as to give us support in our fight. We've also made a marking on the Google Maps in order for people to visit us. So we've had visitors who originally thought that this was like a regular camp, who came there and got informed and then spread the word in their communities and their countries and so on.
Okay, so everyone nearly you had there. And since we are talking about in the past about the camp, I would like to ask you, what is the actual situation of this camp or the project?
So basically on 24th of March, the state finally sent their final troops on the camp. Sweet. And they cut down around 140 trees. And it was such a disaster just standing there and witnessing this whole event. There were only 30 activists over there when this happened, and around 100 police officers. So basically after this happened, we no longer stayed in the camp, but the camp prevailed. We still have the infrastructure in this area, and we are planning to mark the day when all of this originally began. But after this happened, we realized there, even though we called different institutions, sent emails, the day when this started happening, me personally, I called the institutions to say that there were people taking illegal actions, cutting these trees down, and the institutions told me to send an email. So it was an absurd situation, but because of this, we've decided to take a different type of action and start pressing the charges for these inactivities. So the camp as an idea is still standing. The camp as an infrastructure is still standing, but it is not populated because we no longer have anything to protect, as everything we've been trying to protect has been taken down.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And what do you know about this Chinese company that was chosen to do the job?
So basically, this is the CRBC. It is a Chinese national company. It stands for China Road and Bridge Corporation. It is known for conducting fraudulent business, and it has also been blacklisted by the World Bank from 2011 until 2017 for fraudulent business in Philippines. It was included in the non-transparent business in the previously mentioned Philippines, in Kenya, in Bangladesh, among others. So basically they're making business with third world countries which are undeveloped. And the thing is that you have to take a Chinese loan, a loan from Chinese banks, and if you cannot repay your debt, you might lose some of your country's infrastructure. So the main problem is that there are no public competitions for these projects, which is against the public interest. And therefore, we know that the company is making shady business with our country's representatives. And the company also devastated 6 kilometers of the river Tara in Montenegro, which was protected by the UNESCO. And this all happened while they were building the highway in Montenegro, and they were discharging unfiltered feces and wastewater directly into Tara. So the local activists pressed charges, and the court decided that the CRBC had to rehabilitate this area, and they believe that it will take around 15 to 20 years until the ecosystem gets back to the place where it was. So our biggest problem is that our country's representatives have named this a project of a national importance, and therefore they have put a veil of secrets over the project, as we haven't been able to see the project itself until this day. We've only seen renderings and animations, but we don't know anything. Our structural engineers or civic engineers cannot know anything about this project in order to make any assessment on how costly it actually is in comparison to the loan our country has taken. And the worst part is that this is not the only project that is being done by CRBC in our city or in our country. So basically we are getting ourselves into a really bad situation, in which the country's representatives have their hands in corruptive acts, and we will be the ones who will be repaying this debt.
Yeah, I also remember you, when we met, you told us that you had to face also brutal repression by also unsigned forces that enter your camp. And yeah, I was wondering also if this term of climate terrorist is that an established wording in Serbia?
We are not climate terrorists, but our government has been even more imaginative, so we've been called eco-jihadists. And it's so absurd, because you know they're not. We are trying to protect the law. We want our city to progress. We obviously want that, but we don't want that to happen at the cost of destroying nature, while every single bigger European city is trying to reintroduce forests. We are destroying the only natural forest in this area. And regarding your question about the oppression and the brutality, so yeah, in October, more than 200 police officers appeared, because from June until October, we were protecting this area through our camp, and there were no activities. Sometimes there would be some representatives from the state, from the public companies, but nothing was actually getting done. And finally, in October, there were more than 200 police officers. These were special police forces, special anti-terrorist units, and so on. And they were sent to Shodros to face the activists, because we organized. As soon as the first Chinese workers came there, we've called the people to come and help us protect this area, and asked for permits, but we saw no permits. So they sent 200 police officers on barehanded citizens, and we've been kicked and pushed through the woods and processed, and we've ended with over 100 misdemeanor and criminal charges for a one-year period. And we know these are political acts, as they have no stance in law, but it is something that it's like a repressive system which is trying to scare us from further activities.
Yeah, and is that also your next steps, that you want to fight against this oppression on the law level, or what will be your next step?
So basically, after this cutting that happened, that took place in March, we decided to take legal actions and start pressing charges against each individual that didn't take their proper action in order to protect the law. So we've organized a campaign called Following the Traces of the Crime, and we've pressed charges against individuals in two institutions. But in early May this year, we've had a first school mass shooting in Belgrade, which froze us in our tracks. And so everything has been put on pause because of this, because then another set of mass shootings followed, which was a strong signal that the whole violence spilled over on our youngest population. And so we decided to like make a pause until we see and try to press the state to take proper actions, because this is the systemic violence we've been experiencing for the previous 10 years through Serbian Progressive Party and their destructive rhetoric. And it simply spilled over to the youngest population, and it was a result of the oppression and brutal violence we've been experiencing, be it physically or mentally or through institutions, through the corrupted media and so on. So our whole action is on pause, and we are trying to give support to the families, and we are taking part in the massive protests in order to try and change our society, which has been deteriorating, and it seems to be quite cancerous, so to say.
Yes, I'm sorry to hear about all this violence, and I still would like to ask if you can collect your strength again, how we could help from here, maybe your campaign.
Well, the thing is, I completely forgot to mention, we were also in contact with the Berne Convention, which is a convention trying to protect wildlife and areas all over Europe. And they have also pressed the local government, and they have pointed out that the law wasn't followed. So that is another layer of our fight. It wasn't only on the terrain. And I guess you can also help us by contacting international organizations who might be able to help us with our costs for the lawyers or for some further actions, as well as give us advice on how we can prevail in this what seems to be an absurd fight, trying to protect the law.